Welcome to PR After Hours, your weekly cocktail of news and interviews with leading thinkers in PR, marketing, and business. So pull up a chair in our virtual lounge. Your host, Alex Greenwood, will be right back after this.
You know, listeners, I've been podcasting off and on since like 2006, and the past few years alone, done over 400 hours of shows, mostly interviews or being interviewed, that kind of thing. And I had a brief stint on the radio back in the day. But one thing I've learned about being, I think, a good host, I think, and definitely being a good guest, is to listen and ask questions and have a conversation, not necessarily, you know, put the third degree light on people's face, that kind of thing. I think that's always served me well, been very beneficial. I had a guest on my other show, John Gilstrap, best-selling author, who said once, he says, gosh, he's been doing a whole media tour. And he said, this is refreshing. And I said, oh, how so? He says, well, the last few I've been on, you could have said I killed Kennedy in the middle and they would have went, okay, next question. You know, it's a thing that a lot of people in podcasting, especially if they're newbies, are learning, is that, you know, the best, most integrated and engaging content is always when it's just human beings talking with each other. And that's why I'm so excited to have on the show Joe Pardavila. He has produced over 10,000 hours of audio content over the course of his career in podcasting and terrestrial radio. He was a radio personality and producer on the legendary New York City radio station 95.5 PLJ, where he was part of the iconic Scott and Todd in the Morning. He's also the author of a book you're going to want to look into called Good Listen: Creating Memorable Conversations in Business and Life. Joe Pardavila, welcome to the virtual lounge.
Alex, thanks for having me. And I think the only reason I have more hours on you is probably because I'm older than you, because you'll probably catch up to me eventually.
I don't think you are, buddy.
No? All right. Start very young. My first paid radio job, I was 20 years old. So I wasn't even legal to drink when I started working in radio. So I guess I probably had an advantage in that situation.
I love checking out what you're writing about in your book, and I've seen some of your other interviews, and you're talking about really being not just a good listener, but somebody who's expressing interest in other people and having a good conversation. Is that a lost art these days?
Yeah, I think it's a lost art for many reasons. I think, without being two old men shouting at the clouds, I think the technology has something to do with it. I think we've all gotten lazier in communications and again, I am one of those people, I love technology as much as anybody. So I love a good text, a good tweet. I love all of that. But what it does is it kind of erodes our talents. Like you stop being good at something once you stop doing it. You know, it's a pretty natural thing in any kind of activity, whether it's a sport, a hobby. If you stop doing it after a while, you're going to have to like restart and rework those skills over again. So I think that's part of it. The second part of it is the curiosity piece. So I don't know about you, Alex, but I feel like we all get to a certain age where we're afraid to ask questions or don't want to ask questions. You know, we probably get hammered down when we annoy our parents, when we ask them 1,000 questions. They're like, well, you just shut up and stop asking us questions. So I think that's part of it. And then we all get to this point where we're just afraid to ask questions. Maybe it's just drilled into our subconscious where it's considered, quote unquote, rude to ask questions or quote unquote, nosy. Adjectives I've been thrown at in many times in my career and life. So I think it's those two things. I think it's technology piece and the fact that inherently we're all trained to not be so curious or question things. And so I think that those two things hand in hand have sort of what hurts human beings these days.
Joe, I've not heard it quite articulated that way, but throughout my career as a reporter and all this stuff, but I'm just a naturally inquisitive person anyway, but I always had it in my head that people like to talk a little bit about themselves and are flattered when they get a question. But I actually, not everybody, of course, but I've had people who I'll ask kind of questions, not like, you know, really personal questions, but kind of give me the stink eye, like, what are you flirting with me? Or are you trying to get over one on me? Are you trying to find out about my business? And it's almost a paranoia.
Yeah, I think there is some of that too, but I think especially when you're dealing with public settings, whether you're in an office, doing a podcast, doing some sort of transaction, I think the people that are paranoid, they have deeper issues. I don't think there's much we can do about those folks. But I think generally speaking in broad terms, I know people don't like speaking in broad terms. I get people give me crap all the time when I speak broadly. I think broadly, people like talking about themselves. You're going to get folks who don't or too shy. But that's why having an inquisitive nature and asking questions that are appropriate, that will drive conversations, I think that's why people are able to make connections. That's why some people are better conversationalists than others, because they know the questions to ask, when to ask them, how to ask them. But on the other hand, people just love talking about themselves. As you mentioned, I worked for many, many years in terrestrial radio in New York, over 20 years. And then I transitioned into podcasting, working into business media. And one of the things that I was sort of worried about was making that jump was I went from interviewing celebrities, artists, entertainers, musicians, what have you, and then jumped into the media, business media space, where I was interviewing CEOs, entrepreneurs, thought leaders. And I had a bit of what would some people call imposter syndrome. Like, what am I going to say to these people? I don't know anything about, I don't know what KPI means. I don't know what P&L stands for. Like, I don't know all these terms that business people know or get MBAs for. I didn't even know what MBA stood for Christ's sake. So I didn't know any about that. But what I realized was once I started doing it, Alex, it was really just the same crap. Fill in the S word if you prefer. It's people wanting to talk to other people, sharing their story with other people. And once I came to that realization was, oh man, this is just like what I normally used to do. But now I'm just talking about businessy things, but I'm coming in from a layperson's way in terms of like, I want to be the avatar for my audience that like not every person's going to know what every acronym stands for. So in a way, me being slightly not so smart compared to my guests gives me an advantage to the audience to be like, hey, listen, I don't understand either. So I've got someone there who can sort of ask these questions.
I think that's such a great approach. If you come in kind of like a blank slate a little bit and just say, you humble yourself with the guest, that puts them in the role of expert and they can go, oh, well, Alex, oh, well, thanks for asking what that means. Here's the thing. I do it too. I'm not going to tell you I play dumb, but I mean, come on, you and I, we interview different people about different things virtually every day. How could we possibly be experts on everything we're talking to people about, right?
Absolutely. So,
I know just enough. I always tell my guests right before we start. I didn't tell it to you because we're both podcasters, but I usually say I know just enough to be dangerous here, folks. So, you know, help me out. Don't make me help me not look stupid on the show. And that always seems to put people in a little bit more of a relaxed state. So do you find, though, that technique does create a trust and a bond with most people then to kind of go in it that way?
Absolutely. And, you know, in my radio studio in New York, my boss had this sign and it had just three printed words on it in big, like Arial 48 font: preparation, concentration, moderation. And so you and I, when we're speaking to folks on podcasts, we may not be the expert in the field that this person is, but preparation, you can be prepared and ask the questions that can make this expert shine. Because at the end of the day, that's what you want to do with your guests. You want to put the spotlight on them. And then the moderation piece goes into just taking your time, enjoying the moment. I think a lot of people are so rushed to, oh my God, I have these three questions that I really want to ask and I got to start from the top. But you probably shouldn't start the question like that. Sometimes just little, you know, you hate to say it as small talk, but like, for lack of a better term, small talking at the top of an interview to create that environment where the person is comfortable answering questions that may be heavy hitters down the line. They've gotten into a place where they are safe and they feel like they can answer just about any question. And the third piece of that is concentration. A lot of people, going back to our technology piece, is the concentration. We're doing 1,000 different things when we're communicating with people in real life. But one of the things I love about podcasting is, when do you have the opportunity to have a 30 to 60 minute unencumbered conversation where you have no distractions in the entire world? Like, where does that even, where can you think of another sort of, unless you're having like a one-on-one really dreary appointment with a doctor or a lawyer or something like that, you're mostly going to be distracted in the world we live in today. So the concentration piece is so important. And so obviously not everyone's doing a podcast, but if you keep that in the back of your mind, like, hey, listen, if I'm having this conversation with someone, let me not look down at my phone. Let me be distracted by something that's going on in my world. Let me not open an email while someone's having a conversation with me. So keeping those three elements in mind, I think have been a driving factor in my entire career. And even though they're very simple in terms of like just what they're all about, I'm all about keeping things simple. You know, when I played high school in football, my coach used to say, KISS, keep it simple, stupid. And I think for a lot of things, we overcomplicate it. But yeah, when it comes to communication, conversations, that's the simple stuff. That's the human stuff. That's the stuff that, you know, life's made about.
Can I just ask you a little bit about the industry? Since you, it's very rare I get to speak with someone who had a successful career in radio who is now podcasting. Yeah, if that's all right. How do you feel about it? How do you like, I mean, I love what you just said. I mean, you're not going to get interrupted to go to commercial, right? That's one thing we could say that, but how do you feel about the medium versus terrestrial radio?
Well, I think for many years, people have been saying radio is dying, and I don't think it's dying because of anything more than self-inflicted. It's like, radio has taken on a self-inflicted wound with the way that they operate. And without getting too granular here, as you may know, there are probably three or four major radio companies that own a majority of the radio stations across the country. This is no secret. And what happens there, as these companies started to just take on massive debt, they realized the only way they could save money is by not farming talent in smaller markets. So their personalities in New York and LA will be heard in Albuquerque and Charleston. Right. So in a way, that divested the pool of talent. When people say, who's the next great radio star? I'm like, that next great radio star doesn't exist. That next great radio star has a YouTube show or is a TikTok influencer. That's where people of our generation, if I clump you in there, Alex, if we were coming up in these times, we would probably be doing that. We wouldn't even be thinking about a radio career or terrestrial. It just wouldn't be top of mind because there wouldn't be those opportunities. But now with technology, there are opportunities for folks that they don't have to go. Like, you know, when I was coming up in the 90s and 2000s, if you wanted to be a successful radio personality and make a mark in your business, you had to work your way up. So quote unquote, through the minor leagues of smaller market radio, and then work your way up to a New York, LA, Chicago. Nowadays, you don't have to live in one of these major cities to be a big star. You could be a YouTube personality doing your own show or podcast from your parents' basement in Jacksonville. It doesn't matter where you are. So I think locality has a lot to do that. But radio really had a big impact on itself in doing that. I mean, if you look at the major stars, like the household names in radio, who, if you listen to radio, they're Elvis Duran. He's in his 50s. Howard Stern, I think he's probably in his 60s. Yeah. Ryan Seacrest is around our age, late 40s. There's no young up-and-coming radio personality that you know of. Right. And so it's because of what radio did. It sort of cannibalized itself and not allowing for these building a farm team, so to speak, in these other markets where people could come up and become radio personalities. So I think that's what's really affected radio more than anything. Radio is not going anywhere. It's still the easiest medium to consume. I mean, there are some days I'm a big Spotify fan. There are some days I'm just too lazy to plug in my phone and I'll just listen to the local radio station. So radio will always exist. And so I think the podcast is just an evolution of it, which is kind of funny because I came up in the era of like AM talk radio is dead. Like everyone wanted to be an FM. The talk radio was the stodgy old people. It was local news. It was government. It was talking about politics. And now you've noticed that a majority of podcasts, you know, excluding genres like the true crime and the fiction stuff, a majority of it is basically what would have been on AM talk radio 30, 40 years ago. So I find that very funny. So I think podcasting is an evolution of that where it's like, okay, this is where radio was, but it's become that again.
Would you ever go back?
I probably would, but I'm honestly become, I'm sort of like a Gen Zer in the fact that I love the opportunity to work from home. I've gotten used to it. It was never something I ever envisioned. So if the opportunity arose where I had a chance to maybe work from home or just not have to worry about relocating, because that's the thing, because, you know, I'm down here in Charleston, South Carolina. There's, I think, one radio group that owns like 90% of the station. So I'd have to probably get one job there and work on six different radio stations. So it wouldn't be the most fun experience. I don't know. I mean, I'm not one of these people like, I would never do that again. But I would say right now, just the way I'm living, and I've lived in New York my entire life, then came down to Charleston 3 years ago. I just love the way I'm living. I mean, but again, I'm totally open to any kind of opportunities like that if it fits. But then again, I don't think anyone's looking for me. I don't think, you know, I'm a middle-aged white dude. I don't think I'm in high demand in the world of radio, but who knows?
I hear you, brother. So in July 2022, your book, Good Listen, Creating Memorable Conversations in Business and Life, came out. What's the genesis of the book? What gave you the idea? And let's talk about that.
Yeah. So the funny thing, Alex, is I am one of these people that in the minority that never had a book on their bucket list. I think if you run into like 100 people, 90 of them will say, I'd love to write a book one day. And I was just never that person. I never thought I had a book in me. So the company I ended up working for is called Advantage Media Forbes Books. And basically we're a hybrid publishing company that publishes books for entrepreneurs, CEOs. And we offer a la carte array of marketing offerings. So we have we offer blogging, we offer website development. And in 2020, they decided to add podcasting to further the authority of these authors. And when I jumped aboard and started working with these authors, to me, this is my first full-time job doing podcasting. I dabbled in podcasting when I was in terrestrial, but it was my first full-time experience doing podcasting. And when I took the job, I was like, okay, cool. I'll basically do the same thing I did in my radio days, just like preparing people to do a show and then, you know, making sure everything sounds great, editing all the bells and whistles that goes in it. But what I realized was that I had taken 20 years of my learnings for granted. I had assumed that everything I knew, most people knew. In terms of communicating, yeah. In terms of being a host, in terms of preparing for a show, in terms of executing a show, what it took to sound good. I thought that was just something most people knew.
Yeah.
But foolishly, no one outside of people who do it knows that. And so I it turned out that I started working with these folks, Alex, who had no idea how to do any of this. And they, you know, some had never even listened to a podcast in their life. And then I was preparing them to be on a podcast and host a podcast. So I realized that, man, all of these abilities and something they call soft skills now that I had acquired, most people don't have. And I was able to coach and consult these folks to do it. And you know how comedians talk to each other and they always say, you know, is this a thing? So I said to the powers that be of my publishing company, I'm like, is this a thing? Could this be a book? Like the stuff that I'm teaching these people be a book? And they're like, yeah, absolutely could be a book. And I wrote in a few months because all of the stuff in the book was fresh. It was all like the anecdotes and the lessons I had learned in radio that I was telling to people every day in my life, consulting them, coaching them, getting them ready to do a podcast. So the book sort of like wrote itself. I was just laying out my experiences in radio. I have some celebrity interactions in there that I use more for not name dropping purposes, but from what I learned from those experiences and what people can learn from those experiences. And it's always fun to have good, juicy celebrity stories. So yeah, I mean, I don't want to say it was an accidental thing or it was just really just, what do you say? Serendipity, that I was doing the stuff that was helpful to people. And I thought it could be helpful to more people than people who could afford our services.
Yeah, it's funny. I wrote a few pieces on Medium about how to be a good podcast guest, and I had somebody comment and say, you should make a book out of this. And my book's not a full-fledged book like yours. Mine's more of a kind of a chapbook, kind of just like, you know, learnings and stuff like that. But there's a hunger for that. People are curious. And I think that's something I had to get used to, like you said. Now, I'm not at your level, but I definitely know more than the average bear about doing this. And I just kind of like you, I always assume, well, they're CEO of a company. Surely they know how to, you know, talk to people. No, a lot. In fact, a lot of them were terrified, and I had to train them. Right?
Yeah.
Same as you. Let me ask you this question, if you don't mind. Just maybe something from the book, but there's like over 2 million podcasts out there. Okay. Now, not all of them are consistent, and you know, but for the ones that seem to be consistent and all that, what have you noticed that maybe is good, and what have you noticed that's maybe something they should work on? I'd love to hear your take on that.
Yeah. So first and foremost, I do want to say too, though, for folks who are listening to this and are interested in my book, I will say my book is not a how to podcast book, because that's one thing I didn't want to do. The book has elements of practices and tips that could help you for a podcast, but I didn't want to do that. I didn't want it to be such a niche thing where it's like only podcasters read this book. I was like, all of this stuff that we're talking about in these last 20 minutes or so, and the stuff that I write about in the book is like stuff that could help you in everyday life, in whether you're it with your family, friends, and business. So I just want to add that. But sure, when it comes to the way in terms of what podcasters are doing well, I tell people all the time, create a plan for yourself. Avoid the dreaded pod fade. I'm sure you've heard this phrase before, and if folks aren't familiar with it, it's basically when you start listening to podcasts and all of a sudden it stops and you never see it again.
Yeah.
Avoid that if you can. And the best people do this, and what I suggest to folks, and people do this really, really well, is think of your podcast as a TV series. If you think of your podcast as a weekly or semi-weekly show that's on 52 weeks a year, that's really overwhelming for folks who are just getting into it. Right. Even if it's just a side hustle or even just a hobby. So I always say, give yourself expectations and the audience expectations. The people that are doing it best have their expectations for themselves and the audience. People know that on this day, every Tuesday, yeah, a podcast is coming. And then for you going forward, you know, oh, okay, cool, I've got a week to make sure I have a podcast on Tuesday. Obviously, there's other ways to do it. You could bank a bunch of episodes, all that jazz. But if you structure it in a way where you're thinking of it as a season, like a TV show, you know, a TV, yeah, show has, you know, 8 to 10 episodes, the old model, 24 episodes. If you think of your podcast as a series and give yourself seasons, that gives you the opportunity to set expectations for yourself and the audience. Okay, man, with my bandwidth, I think I can only do 10 episodes. Cool. You do your 10 episodes, you drop them, you take a break, and you then announce to your audience, okay, cool, coming up in July 1st, a new season of the podcast, you have your next 10 episodes. So I think people that have that framework of knowing what to expect from yourself in terms of like the output and what the audience expects, because there's nothing more disappointing for anyone who consumes anything when a show is canceled. We're living in an age where these streaming companies, whether it's HBO Max, Netflix, they're launching all these shows, and next thing you know, they're canceled. Yeah. And I think that is probably one of the most frustrating things for people. And so if you build up expectations, like there was a show on Netflix called 1899. I didn't really get into it, but it was very popular. People seemed to love it. And they did this amazing show where they ended on this cliffhanger. And then 2 weeks later, they canceled the show. So people who consumed the show were like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
What happened? So the way I tie that into what I was discussing is like, don't leave people hanging, yeah, like create expectations that they know they're getting their content when they want it.
Yeah, I agree. I've done a few shows since 06 where they weren't for whatever reason working for me or the audience, usually the audience, but I did that. I just said, this is my farewell show. Don't be looking for us anymore. So sorry that we're going to go, thanks to both of our fans, but we're going to go. But, and I totally appreciate that. And Joe, I wish I'd met you a few years ago, because it was only 2021 when I realized I doing two shows and running my day job, my own business, I really could not keep producing at the level I was. So I created two seasons a year, and I give myself time, and I've learned a valuable word that's also a complete sentence, which occasionally is no to somebody, yeah, who wants to guest. It's just, oh, you sound interesting, but maybe not quite 100% for this episode or for this show, or it's probably not right for our audience, but hey, have you thought about this show? You know, yeah. I hate to just say no, and you know, to me, that's kind of cold, but I like to at least say, have you thought about this show?
Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I'm coming from a world of rejection in radio. You know, we were always the low man on the totem pole. So to get celebrities on a show was always just a real grind, especially being in New York. And yeah, I always say, people were like, oh, you must have so much access to celebrities in New York. And I'm like, yeah, but the problem is we're in the number one media capital in the world, where celebrities come to town and they have 600 options to do media. They've got three network morning shows. They have three local morning shows. They have two late night shows. They've got all the media that goes on from all the local cable networks that are in the area. So radio is just the last man on the totem pole. So it was, yeah, I was always getting no's. And I will be honest with you though, I'd rather hear a no than a nothing. Because the one, yes, thing that is one of the things that drive me crazy in this world is that in the way we communicate, like if you walked up to someone and you said, hey, can you do this for me? Have they ever just walked away without saying anything? Like, have they ever just looked at you? And that's essentially what happens with email nowadays. People will send an email out and not even respond. So I would prefer over anything. I mean, trust me, I'd rather have a yes, but I would much prefer a no than a I have to then circle back 2 weeks later. Hey, just checking back in. And it's so annoying. And it's such a big part of any kind of media operation, whether you're doing a podcast, terrestrial, anything. It's always about like having to circle back because people don't feel it's important or they have the time to respond to an email, which seems shockingly petty because it only takes a second. But yeah, I'll any day of the week, Alex, I'll tell you, I'd rather get a no than a nothing.
Can I borrow that two-word phrase, shockingly petty? I love that. That's great. Well expressed. In Good Listen, Joe Pardavilla shares his wisdom and experiences on how talking less and listening more can have a profound positive impact on our personal and professional life. It's a must-read for anyone who wants to learn the secrets of effective listening. And that's from Michael Clinton, author of Roar in the Second Half of Your Life. There's lots of good reviews. Folks, you can get it on Amazon. Where else can we find this book, Joe?
Yeah, pretty much anywhere you could buy a book. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target. You can get the ebook, you get a paperback, or if you want to listen to my voice drone on for several hours, there's an audiobook as well.
That sounds fantastic. And website?
But mostly social media. So I'm at Joe Pardavilla on Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Feel free to shoot me a message, ask any questions. I'm happy to help anybody.
Joe Pardavilla has produced more than 10,000 hours of audio content over the course of his career in podcasting and terrestrial radio. And he has been helping us learn a few lessons, even in our regular lives, if we're not podcasters, of ways to communicate more effectively. And I think his book is going to be a must read for Good Listen. It's called Good Listen, Creating Memorable Conversations in Business and Life. Joe Pardavilla, thank you so much for teaching us and joining us here in the virtual lounge.
Alex, happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
You know what that means? It's last call here at the Virtual Lounge. Be sure to visit PRAfterHours.com for links to what we discussed in this episode and more. Be sure to follow us wherever you get your podcasts. And join us next time for another round at PR After Hours with Alex Greenwood.